Hi guys and gals, and welcome to another Trinity Tim's podcast. My name is James Forrest. I'm hosting this one tonight. I write the Celtic blog, and I'm joined, as ever, by my two colleagues, Eric Knott from Read Celtic and Joe McHugh from Video Celts. How is everybody feeling after yesterday? If your heart rate has just returned to normal, you're probably not the only one. I don't remember a mere incredible ending to a game since the last time we had an incredible ending to a game, which we've managed three in a week. Martin O'Neill says that his 72-year-old heart is finding it difficult to handle. I can speak for all of us, I think, when I say that we're all finding it difficult to handle. There is something to be said about having the resilience to win games late, but it's not the ideal way to win games. Nobody would want it this way, but when we were 2-0 down yesterday, there was a certain inevitability about winning it late in the day. I didn't expect to win it in the 7th minute of injury time, but them are the breaks. And if there's one thing we've proved, is that we will play to the final whistle whenever the officials think the final whistle should be, and not when Neil McCann thinks it should be, or village idiot Chris Boyd thinks it should be. Yesterday was one of those weird days that makes you glad to be a football fan and makes you wish that your dad had taken you to the zoo instead, because the roller coaster of emotions on day days is incredible. And myself and Paulina were in graces for it. And at halftime, I don't think it's been a long time since I felt that gutted, since I felt that absolutely sick. And I genuinely didn't see a way back. We all sort of agreed, the group of runners all sort of agreed, that we needed an early goal in the second half for any chance at all. And Tineke provided that. And then Nygren goes and scores the equaliser. And from that moment on, I thought that we were going to win it. But by God, we left it late. But the finish is superb for Ayo, and his celebrations, I thought, were significant. Not just for that he chose to celebrate with the fans by jumping in the crowd, but if you watch on the left-hand side of the screen, the big crow up passes. He's the guy who gets the cross out of the box for Ayo. And he stands there and he watches what happens. And the second it hits the back of the net, he runs and jumps out of the crowd on the other side of the goal. So it was fabulous to see the players doing that with the fans yesterday. And Arayo's statement after the game about the fans being the 12th man and how they didn't think they would have won the game without them. There's a message there for our board if they care to hear it. If they care to get the loudest, most passionate, most vocal fans back into the ground again. And the sooner the better. Because it was the fans that helped carry the team across the line yesterday, and it was an exceptional performance for the Celtic supporters, even if not for everybody in the Celtic team. I'm sure we'll get to that. Martin O'Neill at the end of the game has said that we need to start winning these earlier. I've put up a piece for later on the night which echoes that sentiment, and the fact is that if we're winning these games earlier, it gives us a chance to take players off earlier. It gives us a chance to rest crucial players rather than having to bring them on and having to run for a whole 90 minutes in order to get the result. You would rather be in this position than in the position the club across the city is in, where it's conceding late goals. But if we took our chances a bit earlier against Livingston, there wouldn't have been a contest to speak about. If we'd have done it against Dundee, then we wouldn't have needed a last-minute equaliser. And yesterday we didn't create as many chances, but the stats in the first half had us well ahead, well on top. And ironically, it's the stats in the second half that had Kilmarnock in front. But we took the chances then and we punished them for their mistakes. And that's how we're going to have to treat every game from now on. If we can take that second half performance and put it in the first half, we'll have a bit more breathing space, and we are going to need it. It was a great comeback, but it was stressful. Eric, what did you think watching it? Heart rate, doing it?
Yeah. I mean, I've just found over the last three games, when entering into injury time, the heart rate just starts to get faster and faster, because you're at the point where you're beginning, and this began with the Dundee game, and you're at the point where you're beginning to get very stressed. Like in the Dundee game, where I thought we might be going out of the cup, in the Livy game, where I thought we might be dropping points, and again yesterday, where I thought we might be dropping points. And like, I can honestly say, in all of my time as a Celtic supporter, I don't ever remember three games in a row where we scored crucial goals in injury time. I've seen a lot of late goals from Celtic, but never like three in a row to that extent. So, I mean, it's not good for the ticker. But it really does show a never-say-die attitude from the team. And whatever Martin has instilled into them, you know, this never-say-die attitude has just really, really pulled them out of a hole in the last three games. But Martin, and I think everybody else is right in saying that we have to start winning games comfortably. We have to start scoring our goals early in games, you know, racking up a two or three in the first half so that we have a comfortable second half, because it's a long, long time since we've had a comfortable second half. Yeah. So we really need to start doing that. But some of the standout things for me in the game yesterday were, obviously, again, Hatate's performance, or his non-existent performance in the first half. He just, unfortunately, as much as the guy has contributed over the last few years and as much as I love him, he has just appeared to be an empty shirt at the moment. Like, if you look at the difference between the midfield in the first half, it was like it was soft as putty in the first half, and then it was a midfield of steel in the second half when Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain came on. And the minute he started from the commencement of the second half, you could see the difference. You could see how the midfield settled. You could see how the cohesion. You could see how immediately Celtic, as a unit, knew exactly what they were doing when they were going forward. That first ball that the Ox lifted over the defence showed that, you know, he has that special pass in his locker. He's going to be able to unlock defences as well with the passes that he can release. And it's just a shame he's not going to be there Thursday night, because, you know, if they had just gone a day earlier and got him in, it would have been fantastic to have him as an asset against Stuttgart. Because, but then again, I suppose the advantage of that is that the likelihood is there'll be tired legs after the game on Thursday night, so Martin will probably start the Ox on Sunday against Hibs. So that's probably one, you know, kind of advantage that we have of him not playing against Stuttgart. But a couple of other things that really stood out to me is the Julian Araujo and the way he reacted to the, you know, the scoring of the goal. But that interview afterwards, that Martin O'Neill, you put it up in a post or in an article, Joe, where Martin O'Neill stuck his head in at the end, and that was brilliant. But you could really tell what it meant to him. And this is a guy who played over 100 games in MLS with LA Galaxy, got a move to Barcelona, went on loan to Las Palmas, and that didn't really work out, and then got sold to Bournemouth, and has been kicking his heels on the bench at Bournemouth, and got one game in a League Cup, you know, tie. So for him, like, he really realizes what it's about at Celtic. But, like, I looked at the pictures and some of the camera shots of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at the end, and the grin from ear to ear on the guy was off the scale. And the hug that he gave to Araujo, you know, he's been there, done it. He's got the T-shirt. He's done everything in football. But I sincerely doubt, in all the years that he's been playing football, that he has seen a stand just holding 4,000 fans react like it did to that third goal, and the noise that came from there. And I'd say, you know, there's a first for everybody in their football career, and I doubt that he's ever, like, he's seen a lot in his time, but I'd say he was even astounded at the reaction when we scored that winner, you know? But like I say, we're on a never-say-die attitude, but we just have to start wrapping up games earlier. Otherwise, this is going to, like, somebody is going to have a fucking heart attack before the end of this season. And if Martin O'Neill doesn't have one, you know, at his age, God love the guy. He's really, you know, he's really being put through the mill by players anyway, that's for sure. But still, to see his wit and his sense of humor at the end of it yesterday, you know, with the interview with Araujo, that was brilliant as well. But yeah, look, it's a shame about Hatate. I don't know what's going on inside in his head. I don't know how Martin O'Neill can't get out of him what he has in his locker. I don't understand that, you know, because O'Neill has always been a guy who's been able to man-motivate and get the best out of players. Maybe things are getting lost in translation, I don't know. But it is a shame. But you can see that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is going to have a pivotal part to play in this season. And he really could be the difference in midfield for us when it comes to him. And just finally then...
Disaster.
Yeah, but just finally then, Seb Tounekdi. I mean, what a time for him to be coming into form at the business end of the season, you know. He did the same thing against Auchinleck Talbot, except he was closer in. But kind of, he must have said to himself, I'm going to do it again. And the first chance that he got, he did it again, but he did it from further out. And he's really come into his own, and it couldn't be at a better time. And I think as time goes on, once we start having players coming back from injury, once we get Alistair Johnston back into the fold, once we get CCV back into the fold, everything hopefully should start clicking for Celtic in the running. But the signs are there. Definitely the signs are there in midfield that the Ox is going to make a massive contribution. And look, yesterday was brilliant. It was brilliant. You just, obviously, probably I wanted it to be a draw at Ibrox, but regardless, it opens the door for us. You know, that means we win our games and win our game in hand, and, you know, puts us right smack bang in the middle of it. So we're there. You know, we just have to keep our momentum going now, and we just have to... I feel that we need to make a statement win against Hibs on Sunday to show that we're there, and we're going to stay there, and we're going to keep fighting right till the bitter end with this one. So, yeah, that's right.
I read that online the day that says that we have scored 7 times in the last minute in the league this season. 7 times in the league.
Not quite.
Is it not quite right?
No. Look, 7 times after the 85th minute. McCowan scored in the 87th minute in the first game against St Mirren. And then since then, there's been six winning league goals after the 90th minute. Strangely, they've all come from different players. So it was McCowan, McGregor at St Mirren, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Aruko, whatever. They've all had a bit of it. But, and plus, there was the equaliser against Dundee in the Scottish Cup. But strangely, I get some people referencing the centenary season. The centenary season was nothing like this. As Eric said, never before has 3 games been like this. So Dundee was a 96th minute equaliser, Livingston a 91st or 92nd minute winner, and yesterday 97th minute winner. In the centenary season, Scottish Cup semi-final and the final, they were both won very late on. 1-0 turned into 2-1. I think maybe in the league there might have been about 4 or 5. I think Tannadice on Boxing Day. I think Chris Morris. I think Tannadice was Joe Miller, scored very late on, and then a couple of weeks later across the road at Dens Park, Chris Morris I think scored a free kick, but. It was nothing like this. There was not 3 consecutive games, or there wasn't 3 games in a month. So be grateful for that. Game by game, keeps saying you can't keep relying on this, and there's going to come. Well, hopefully, games are tied up or ahead for the 90th minute quite soon, because you certainly can't rely on it. One thing that we all must highlight is overcoming Duncan Nicholson and Greg Aitken. Again, that was horrific yesterday.
Yeah, mate, it was.
The handball in the 85th minute when Brad Lyons lifted his hand, flapped at it to knock it out, to change the course of direction for the ball when Tunetki was expecting it. The referee saw that. Greg Aitken must have been a decent awareness of it, but as we know, Greg Aitken's born and brought up in Kilmarnock, went to school in Kilmarnock, lives in Kilmarnock, and that was the 3rd time in 18 months. So, what was it? The 2 seasons ago when Matt O'Reilly chipped the free kick through for Kyogo and he's wiped out by McCrory, Greg Aitken was on VAR and never noticed that. Last season, somebody smashed Adam Ida's nose. He was down for about 3-4 minutes. That was a yellow card with Nick Walsh and Greg Aitken on VAR decided not to end. So again, but as we've said many times, this is only because Celtic tolerate it. Celtic are happy with this level of levelling up, and it's hard to sustain the way the squad's been weakened, the conditions, the match officials, it's very difficult. But as Eric said, I think that's the second time I've said this, but there is a little bit of a bond growing between the players and the supporters, and that's something that the players have been denied this season, thanks to Michael Nicholson, thanks to Mark Hargreaves, and thanks to Brian Wilson. So with another plea for unity from Brian Wilson, that's 3 since the 5th of January, and he hasn't done a thing about it. I don't know what definition of unity he looks at. I don't know if unity means please get back in the shops and start buying things, or please stop voting for SNP and trust my old pals in the Labour Party. But the players and the support, they're both dying for it. It's two-way. The supporters want to get really close to the players and push them on. And again, the Livingston game last week, playing towards the Celtic end, playing towards the other team's end. If the Green Brigade had been in that corner, all the chances in the first 15 minutes, one or two might have been taken and the team might have been pushed on further. So the team, they're out doing it on their own, largely doing it on their own. They've got a manager that's pushing them on quite a bit, but the club, the team, the SPFL challenge, it really needs everyone getting together. So Brian Wilson apparently had meetings last week. We've all seen bits and pieces of what happened there. He's got a couple of days to get it sorted out for the Hibs match. If it's not sorted for the Hibs match, this one is on Brian Wilson. So if you're not going to deliver unity, don't talk about it. If you've got no intention of doing anything, just leave it. But when Martin O'Neill came back, he mentioned unity before the boycott, and then he was talking about unity in woolly terms in the interim excuses. So let's hope the players can keep it up. We can't keep relying on them. Hatate is a massive problem. One solution I saw, can't remember who it was now, but could Sarachi play inside? Could he play in a midfield position? We seem to have left back quite well sorted now between Tierney and Sarachi. And I would think, for some reason, Martin O'Neill's taking a real downer on Luke McCowan. I mean, not to have got on in either of the last two matches. Paolo Bernardo hasn't made the bench in the last two matches. So with Engels out and the Ox not available for European matches, I might call for some drastic measures. But that's one option. And I think we've got to start really thinking about playing two forwards, and that's between Junior Adamo, Big Thomas, as he's referred to in Celtic social media circles, and even Maeda. Between those three, I think you can get a combination of two. And Tunepke is your first choice winger on the left, and Yang now and then. But Tunepke looks more reliable. He looks more in form. So there's got to be a few changes made.
It's a good call, but what formation would you play for going with two strikers?
4-4-2 or 4-3-3. I mean, 4-3-3, everybody now thinks it's two wingers. 4-3-3 can be two strikers and either Tunepke on the left or Yang on the right and switch it around. So you've got five substitutes. Sticking to 4-3-3 and thinking it'd get two functioning wingers. I've went on about it umpteen times, but under Ange, we had Abada and Forrest on the right, Maeda and Jota on the left. 60 minutes gone. Bring on two wingers and switch Kyogo and Giakoumakis, and teams are getting battered silly. Nowhere near that just now, but needs must, and I'd be playing with two strikers between the three I mentioned, and either Yang or Tunepke on the wing. Tunepke being first choice, but the team is managing to dig things out. Things are a little bit better. I don't think last week we would have been expecting or being complimentary about single goal victories over Livingston and Kilmarnock, but that horrible old phrase, it is what it is. We're 3 points behind leaders' Hearts with a game in hand, but the next three matches in the league will tell us a hell of a lot. Hibs, Ibrox and Pittodrie. If we are still in the same position in the league, I think we'll be doing quite well. if it's 5 points from those, no, I think we must beat Hibs and we must beat Aberdeen. You've got to take at least 6 points. We'll see what happens at Ibrox. But it's much the same. It's a strange situation. It is unprecedented. And we just need to roll with it, see what's coming next. The Hibs game on Sunday is more important to me than Stuttgart. We're not going to win the Europa League. Hopefully put up a decent performance. But if we lose out over two legs to Stuttgart, it's no disgrace. It's no indictment on the season. We know the circumstances. They've done well with the lack of support from Michael Nicholson to reach the round of 16 playoffs. 23rd in the Europa League is nothing to bang the drum about. But we'll see how Thursday goes. But by far, the far more important game is Hibs on Sunday.
Can I just give a shout out as well to the North Curve boys with their new rendition of I Want to Be Edward, changed over to We Know What It Says About the Board. I thought that was brilliant and I hope they keep it up.
Yep, definitely. Speaking of which, we got interim results in the week between last podcast and this one.
And no merchandise figures.
We'll get to them. And we are some £20 million down, which has been blamed, of course, on the lack of Champions League qualification, which we all know who is to blame for that. And it is not Brendan Rodgers. The numbers look bad because they look bad in context, right? They look bad in the context of we're Celtic and we expect to do better. At Ibrox, those numbers would get hailed as a fucking moonshot miracle. But we're not used to seeing a drop in revenue to that extent. And Champions League football is certainly part of it. There's certainly an element in there of, oh, we didn't get our usual whack from UEFA for being in the group stages. But you're right, Eric, they are hiding the merchandising figures and among a bunch of other stuff. How hard do you think it's hitting them?
I think it has to be having a huge impact, James. Especially, you know, when you consider the fact that they're starting, you know, they're putting all the kits on sale. There's an element of desperation creeping in there, if you ask me, because I don't think they imagined that people would take that campaign as literally as they have. No. You know, not another penny. I think an awful lot of the board's mentality has been that, they've always paid their money. They'll keep paying their money. Especially for, you know, we do these merchandise rollouts and they'll keep the money plowing in. I think they've been shocked at the level of support that campaign has got. The fact that it's now been, you know, kind of decided that it's going to continue is obviously a kick in the balls for the board as well, because they know that they have to start negotiating with us in terms of getting, as Brian Wilson, and very well said in your comments there, Joe, you know, don't talk about unity unless you're going to fucking deliver unity. You know what I mean? So, like, unless they start getting unity with the fans, unless they start working with the fans and getting, you know, and making the fans realize that they're willing to work with them, that campaign is going to continue and that campaign is going to keep hitting them. It's one thing, you know, since the Adidas deal was decided in the COVID season, you know, and they got Adidas in as our jersey supplier, like, the revenue has been off the scale. And it was always going to be a no-brainer with Adidas because, you know, they're such a big kid supplier. And I believe, and we talked about it, especially in the early parts of our early days of this podcast, that it was something that they were heavily reliant on. You used to say it, Joe, that, you know, it's a no brainer, the kind of money that could be made and the revenue that could be made out of merchandise. And an awful lot of people used to hail the Adidas deal as a genius deal. And Joe, you used to counter that by saying it's not genius. It's a good kick deal.
Obvious.
Yeah,
Celtic fans are mad for Adidas. They were gagging for it.
Exactly.
They didn't tell them about anything and they'll race to buy it.
It's a no-brainer. And they became totally reliant on that. And they did not expect that they would get the reaction from the Not Another Penny campaign. And I suppose the biggest kind of telling factor there was probably Christmas. And the figures over Christmas were probably way down on what they normally expected to rake in around that time of the year, you know. So I believe, yes, there's probably an element of desperation sneaking in there now. They once again have shown their gutlessness. It's like when you look at another example is the fact that they wouldn't release the official crowd figures for the boycott.
Yeah, correct.
Anything that the collective and the fan base working together achieves, you know, if a campaign is launched, we say we'll do a boycott. Boycott happens, 36,000 down on a capacity crowd, and they won't release the figures. Then there's a boycott when it comes to merchandise and the Not Another Penny campaign. we get the interim accounts and they won't release the merchandising figures. This attitude of bury your head in the sand and ignore it and it'll go away, don't talk about it. Like, we won't talk about it. If we don't talk about it, it's like it doesn't exist. But it does. That's the reality. It does exist, and it's going to keep existing until they start engaging properly with the fan base. And even all this talk about Wilson wanting to meet with certain fan representatives at certain times in different places, and everything is about separating people. There's nothing about getting groups in together and talking to groups and, you know, together, excluding the Celtic Fans Collective when it came to the invites to the fan groups to actually come and talk about unity. Everything is, anything that is achieving anything against them is ignored. Ignore the boycott, it'll go away. Ignore not a penny, not another penny, it'll go away. And overall, ignore the Celtic Fans Collective, and hopefully they'll go away too. And that's just not going to happen. So yeah, 100%, this merchandising boycott has really hit the club hard. And I would be very surprised if Adidas themselves were not asking questions. Adidas have to be, you know, it's a big commitment for a company like Adidas to supply kits for a club. And what Adidas would have seen from the initial sales figures of merchandise when they first came on board compared to what they're seeing now, they have to be asking questions and saying, what the hell is going on here, guys? And how are you going to fix it? You know, because we're not happy about the figures. We're not happy with what we're seeing. And if you don't start getting this together, we might have to pull. You know, and that would be a huge blow to the club to lose the Adidas deal. I'm sure we'd get a good kit supplier again, but, you know, we don't want to be going down the road of our you know, the team across the city with all the fucking around they've done with kits. So, simple fact is, they just have to start engaging and acknowledging what the fan, you know, the Celtic Fans Collective is achieving and what the fans are achieving by doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There is a weird constituency amongst their support that seems to be the attitude that if people want to boycott, then they should piss off and they should leave their season tickets behind and let those on the waiting list take them up. And the club, there is a certain perception in the club that the waiting list gives them some kind of leverage over fans as well. But I would challenge that. There's a couple of reasons why. The first is that the waiting list is made up of supporters just like the rest of us, many of whom will be pissed off just like the rest of us. And there's a difference between being on the waiting list and being offered a ticket and being on the waiting list, being offered a ticket and accepting a ticket. I think that there are people on the waiting list right now who would not accept a ticket if they did get offered one, based on the way the club is being run. These are guys who pick and choose what games they go to right now, and that suits them. And I don't think it would be an easy sell getting a full uptake of tickets if 10,000 fans decided next season they weren't going to bother going. And the other side is that people always overlook who those 10,000 fans would be. We're talking about people, many of them who will be diehards, who will have been got to Celtic Park their whole lives, who at the very least will have been got to Celtic Park for over a decade. And those guys walking away from the club is an absolute catastrophe. Absolute catastrophe, if it ever happens. Because they'll take not only their match day income, they'll take their merchandising income, and they will never set foot in the Celtic shop again as long as these people are in charge. So it's all well and good, you know, people challenging the boycotters on the basis of, well, there's plenty of people waiting to take your tickets. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if there are plenty of people who are waiting to take the tickets. And the loss of the revenue, if those people leave and never come back, is going to be enormous. The club really has to get real about this. And the people in charge of the club have to realise that if this continues on the present path, there's got to be more boycotts. There's got to be more problems for them. There's got to be more holes in the finances. And I know one of the reasons why the Rainy Day Fund exists is so that Dermot Desmond never has to put his hand in his own pocket. That's one of the reasons why we have a Rainy Day Fund, because Dermot Desmond never again wants to put a single penny into Celtic. And the idea that people on our board would ever run the club on the basis of the way the former Ibrox board used to do it, by funding it every single week, is a non-starter. Every single one of those people would walk away from Celtic before they would ever put their hand in their pocket to support it. The only people who support this club are us, the fans. We're the only people who put any money into it. None of these guys do. They're all very good at taking money out, but they will run a country mile if they ever have to put it in. And seeing falling revenues scares the hell out of these people because of the prospect that one day they may have to. And they want to take a, they want to have a good long hard look at where this is going. The boycott proved that fans are serious about going to the wire. And so the only thing that the club can do now, if it wants to maintain its position and not gain any ground, is basically run the club into the ground. And that's not going to happen. If they think that that solves the problem, if they think that that is their get out of jail free card, it's the exact opposite. Because 10,000 Mer fans will just be pissed off at them. 10,000 Mer fans will join the boycott. And they can just keep going down that road if they like. But it doesn't have a happy ending for the many more than the current road does. These people are going to have to realise that it's done. It's over. The summer, last summer, was the game changer. There's a lot of fans who are never going to be on board with these people again. And every single thing they've done since has only made this worse. That 20 million drop in revenue, that's the start of the slide. Whatever the gap between merchandise and what they were making this time last year and what they were making right now is, that is the beginning. That's not the end. So these people are going to have to get real, and they're going to have to sit down and negotiate with fans in good faith. And you know what? I think one or two of them realize that already. And maybe, just maybe, they're starting to see a bit of sense. I mean, we all know that there were talks. We all know that they haven't generated the kind of result that we would want in terms of getting the Green Brigade back in. But even the guys for the Green Brigade who are talking about it on social media are saying, listen, these were productive talks. They weren't a complete write-off. There is progress, but it's not enough progress. But progress will take right now. I think some of them are spooked. They must be. Joe, what about you?
The waiting list is a complete myth. Absolutely. the attendance at Celtic Park tell you there's not 10,000 folk banging the doors down, ready to go to matches. There was no boycott of the Livingston game. There was maybe 40,000 there. There was less than 50,000 there. And that was without any call for a boycott. So there's not thousands and thousands of people waiting to take season tickets. And I've mentioned before, in 1993-1994, there was a general erosion, disillusionment among supporters. The final boycott during that time, it was maybe about 3,000, 4,000 people that were regularly going to, that were still hanging on to going to matches, and they realised enough's enough. So there's possibly 10,000 or more season ticket holders and folk that were regularly buying match tickets that are no longer going to the games. It used to be when they'd put up on Twitter, Celtic FC tickets, tickets now on sale for whatever game, 3 weeks on Saturday, and an hour later they'd be telling you it was sold out. So that doesn't happen. So you're right, the season ticket, the waiting list, there'll be some folk on it, but again, the hardcore, the 10,000 you suggested, James, it might walk away. They already have season tickets. There will be some people, certain circumstances, they're on the waiting list, and they'd love to be back, and they'd be going every week. But I would suggest the majority of them, they'll go to a Stuttgart match, they'll not go to a Dundee Cup tie, they'll pick and choose their matches, and at a certain point, it was worthwhile. Yeah, I'll go on the season ticket waiting list, maybe get a season ticket at some point. But again, the season ticket waiting list is maybe 3 or 4 years old. Circumstances change. Folk that maybe wanted to get on with their kids when they could get a £50 or £60 ticket, it might now be £200 for the juvenile ticket and various things. So there's that side of it. But Jim, I don't know anyone in the Celtic board that's got any notion for let's have peace. I mean, I've mentioned Brian Wilson 3 times. He's mentioned it, and there's still no real concrete developments. And one other item from the interims that must be brought up. Is there anyone watching this podcast that got a shock that Monday night when there was a statement on the Celtic website that Brendan Rodgers had left the club?
I've read in a long time. Celtic were unaware that the manager was on the brink of resigning, right? Well, that's why, presumably, that's why they briefed the media a whole month before it. that he was going to, is that he was working his ticket. So, I mean, these people think we're fucking stupid. They think we've got no memory whatsoever. So, I mean, it's not just have memory, but we've got archives full of stuff that they've said and done. I just think it's absolutely from the sale of Kyogo, expect anybody to believe that.
From the sale of Kyogo in January last year, the Celtic board were desperate to get rid of Brendan Rodgers. They thought they could get another compensation fee and they could line up some puppy to take his place and he'd still be in top in Scotland. So absolute lies from Brian Wilson, lies from the Celtic interim chairman. As again, it's like the five-way agreement with Peter Lowell. Either you saw the five-way agreement and were happy to pass it off, or you're so incompetent that you never knew anything about it. So if Brian Wilson hadn't detected that Brendan Rodgers was just a tad unhappy with the direction that the club was going, he was a wee bit upset that Kyogo hadn't been replaced. He was a wee bit upset that Nicholas Cooten hadn't been replaced. And then finally, in deadline day, Nicholson managed to get one out of three deals done. He managed to sell Ida. He failed to sell Yang or Maeda. If the interim Celtic chairman, a non-executive director, never noticed that there was a wee bit of unrest there, it's time for him to go back to writing stories about fairies for the Scotsman. He's not capable of being the interim Celtic chairman. And again, 20, 30 years ago, he could spin a line like that to the Daily Record and they'd print it out in hundreds of thousands and folk would read it and say, oh, well, that's the way it is. But we're far better briefed now. We know step by step what was going on with Brendan Rodgers. We see every media conference with Brendan Rodgers. It was crystal clear that he was unhappy. And when you get told in October, January transfer window will be more of the same, more rubbish from Paul Tisdale. He says, fine, lads, enough's enough. I'm out of here. So he left, and they weren't getting compensation for him either.
Joe, every single one of you knows that there was a meeting with Desmond at which Brendan Rodgers said, look, we have to resolve this for the good of the club. So we're either going to work it out and you're either going to support me and basically stop briefing against me or I'm going to go. And then it gets the phone call that night saying, well, your resignation is accepted. So for a club that didn't know it was going to happen, you know, they accepted it. They wanted rid of him and they got rid of him. I just thought it was an insult to their intelligence to read that. It was just like I met four young lads in the city centre, bollocks all over again. And these people are just gaslighting us. They're taking the piss.
Yep. That's why I don't think there's anyone inside the club that's got any real inclination to get things sorted. Maybe it'll keep Dermot Desmond a bit sweet if there's a bit of cheering and support for the players from the Green Brigade. I don't think Dermot Desmond's that bothered about it, but it's not as if somebody said, for God's sake, let's get round the table, let's get this sorted. At least there's three home games after the split. I think there might be three before the split, so there's six home league games left. Surely you can get something sorted for those matches, but just as I say, there's no inclination, that they've got no will to do it. They've got disdain, contempt, whatever you want to call it, for the supporters. But we don't know. We've got an idea of what the stumbling blocks are. Mark Hargreaves seems to have a real bee in his bonnet for quite a few people in the Green Brigade. He came into the job on a promise from Michael Nicholson. But a proper chief executive can veto whatever his security, head of security, can do. Yeah, so it can be done. It's Monday night now. The Hibs game's on Sunday. The Green Brigade, they could be doing by knowing on Friday whether they're allowed back. But equally, do the Green Brigade want to come back? Can you imagine the level of security that they'll need to go through? So they deserve a few promises. That just ease back for now. Do whatever the hell you like next season. But there's six league matches to come. Two of them after the split against the club from Ibrox and Hearts, plus one other after the split. If there's anyone in the boardroom that's got a bit of feeling for the club and would like to see this season finish with a league title, just park it for now.
Yep, just one point I want to make there, and one of our commenters said this was along the lines of when we were talking about, you know, the boycotts and that kind of thing, and that, you know, you said, Joe, there were 42,000 fans in the stadium for the game against Livingston. And one of the commenters said, so why are fans looking for an 80,000 stadium? And to answer that question, fans would be looking for an 80,000 all-seater stadium if we had a board who had the ambition to drive us to that level and to invest in Celtic Park to drive us to that level. So if we actually had a board who would drive us to that level and would make Celtic Park an 80,000 all-seater stadium, then fans would be supporting the club because they would believe in the board that we have. The problem is nobody believes in the board that we have now, and that's why interest is waning, and that's why people are boycotting, and that's why people are just losing interest in what's going on at the club at the moment. Different story if we had an ambitious board and a board who could actually get the most out of Celtic, which is all we want. We want Celtic to be the best it can be. And if having an 80,000 all-seater stadium is part of being the best that we can be, then so be it. But until such time as we have a board that shows ambition and wants to take the club to the level that it should be at and that the fans believe it's going to be at, people aren't going to support this fucking charade. They're not going to support it. And support for it will continue to decline. It's that simple. Fans will just continue to get sick and tired of this until these people are gone. And as James said earlier on, their time is up. It is only a matter of time, however long it takes for them to go, but they're not going to win against the fans. And the sooner they realize that, the better. And ignoring it in the hopes that it's going to go away is not going to change that fact. They are not going to win this. The fans will not back down, and the sooner they realize that, the better for them.
The 8,000-seater stadium thing has been going on for a few years. And it was going on when we were filling the ground every single week. And the people who are resisting it are the people who run the club. It's not the fans who are the blockades to this. It's the people who run the club. And one of the reasons why they don't want an 80,000 all-seater stadium is that then the home cup ticket scheme becomes null and void. Then you have to show ambition and put a team on the park, otherwise you'll never fill it. And their argument is that if there was an 80,000 all-seater stadium, season ticket sales would fall because people don't need to have a season ticket to be guaranteed a seat every week. They want the money up front. And that's the truth of it. That's the fact of it. It's the board who are blocking this. And the reason they're blocking it is that they like the idea of having a captive audience, like literally a captive audience, with 50,000 season ticket holders and nowhere for them to go. Because if you give up your seat, then that's it, gone, and you need to join the back of the alleged waiting list. 80,000 seat all-seater stadium, you maybe sell 40,000 season tickets, and 40,000 other fans will pick and choose when they want to come. And the board don't want that. The board does not want us to be in that position, even if it's financially beneficial somewhere along the line, and it would be. This board,
James, is
the people running the club who are very, very, very small-minded.
Yeah, they're the epitome of minimum input for maximum output.
Okay, so let's move on from the club at the moment, and let's talk very briefly about Hearts. They were terrible yesterday, but it was exactly what I expected for them. Hearts have basically flogged it. They had a double-digit lead over Ibrox. They had, I think the highest they had over us was 8 points, was it? Was it 9? I can't remember. But they never quite got a double-digit lead over us, but it's fairly close. And now there's a cigarette paper separating us. As long as we win our game in hand, we're right there in the race. And I think that yesterday was them that I think they ran the race. I think the pressure is now going to get to them. And the second one team or another gets in front of them, I think the season for them will collapse. I mean, it's nothing that we didn't talk about a million times. Joe, what do you think?
No. This league is so poor. I've not quite checked all the fixtures. Hearts have got a reasonable run of it the next couple of weeks. I think the next two home matches are at home. So the next two matches are at home. They'll be up and down. They'll be in contention. They'll be there or thereabouts. They've got important games to come. They'll be a factor. They're still 3 points ahead of us. We've got Ibrox and Pittodrie coming up quite soon. So if we can get above Hearts, if we're a couple of points ahead of Hearts going into the split, I'll take it then. But on paper, their next couple of matches are a lot easier than ours, and we've seen how much we've toiled. So that's it. For a while, it's going to be a three-way race. It's going to be 80-ish points. It's going to be low 80s, and that's because we've come back a long way and Hearts have advanced quite a bit. So I wouldn't write them off quite yet. At some point, Shankland and Devlin will come back. As I say, you're playing against really poor teams. I mean, the Kilmarnock forwards yesterday, the guy, James something or other, James, yeah. Whatever he's called, he's been a nomad. He's been floating around clubs. You're not playing against quality opposition. Hearts will still be involved, and I hope they're involved when Danny Rowe takes his team through to Tynecastle after the split. So they're a bit of a mess, but the league's a bit of a mess. And if it was a Hearts podcast talking about Celtic, our performance the last couple of games, they might not be too complimentary. So I'll hold fire on that one for now, James.
See, what I think we would do well to remember is that if we hadn't gone through our wee
Nancy period,
not just that, but we had a spell under Rodgers and all just before he left, where we were terrible, and where the result at Tynecastle was not exactly the shock of the season. And then we went through the Nancy thing, and across the city they went through their wee trauma spell as well, and I don't think they've been particularly brilliant under Rowe. I mean, the results haven't been particularly brilliant. They're kidding themselves on to an extent about this great run of form that they were on, right? But at the end of the day, Hearts have benefited from both of us being bad, and I think we've improved enough that we will almost certainly finish ahead of Hearts. I've got no doubt whatsoever we'll finish ahead of Hearts. I have no doubt whatsoever that the club across the city will finish ahead of Hearts at this point. And so I would imagine that Hearts will be out of it before the split. I would bet that Hearts are almost out of it before the split. They'll be behind both of us before the split. And they'll be chasing their tails. I don't know. You guys know I never took the whole Hearts thing seriously. They've lasted much longer than I thought. They have shown more resilience than I thought. But if we wouldn't have appointed Wilfred Nancy, we would be well in front of them already. And if the Ibrox club had got its act together a bit earlier in the season and hadn't gone through their wee spell, nobody would be talking about Hearts. Hearts would be sitting in third, challenging Motherwell for fourth. Nobody would be talking about them winning a title. They benefited from two of the most calamitous, self-inflicted tenures that I think I've ever seen at either Glasgow club. And I think a lot of the stuff that's been powering Hearts has been hype and hysteria for the whole season. And the late collapse is no surprise at all. What about you, Eric? I'm nowhere on green.
I think like their win against Tibbs on Tuesday night last, and the load of bravado that we saw out of Derek McInnes at the end of it, they celebrated like they'd just won the title. And I said in an article after that, I think that was kind of, they showed that they will be in this title fight, but that maybe when they go to Ibrox, they won't find it so easy. And the thing about Derek McInnes is, and I said this when he was appointed the manager of Hearts, I said that he has a glass ceiling as a manager. He does this where he did it with Aberdeen back when there was no Ibrox side in the Scottish Premiership. He ran us a bit of the way. He actually got on top of the table for a short period of time when Ronnie Dyla was the manager. But he just bottles it. Whatever it is with this guy, he just has a glass ceiling. And you could tell with the way he reacted to the win against Tibbs on Tuesday night that his temperament, he was starting to show cracks. And the way he was lashing out at both Celtic and the Ibrox. And he went to Ibrox. They were shite. Let's be honest about it. They didn't play well. I mean, they took the lead in the first half, but they literally conceded within a couple of minutes after that. And then once that second goal, you know, went in for the Ibrox side, I reckon, you know, you kind of knew it was going to be curtains for them thereafter. And you're right, Danny Rowell's side aren't, they're no great shakes. I mean, I think what we should really focus on is what Motherwell did to them. And no, I know Motherwell ran us ragged, but that was when we were just absolutely headless, like headless chickens with Wilfried Nancy in charge. But when you look at the possession stats in the game against the Ibrox side on Tuesday or Wednesday evening, Motherwell still had 63% of the possession in that game. Yeah, ran them off the park, had 18 shots, peppered Jack Butland's goal with 18 shots. Even when they were down to 10 men, they looked like that they had the men advantage. And Jens Bertolascu has done a fantastic job with them on a shoestring budget. And like they're going to have a say in this title race. Now, if they win their game in hand, they're going to be within 7 points of Hearts. I'm not saying they're going to win this title, but they're going to have a say. And by saying what I'm saying there is that they will take points off other clubs who are fighting for this title, as in Hearts, possibly ourselves and the Ibrox side, because they are that good. They really proved that on Wednesday evening against the Ibrox side. They were really good, and they don't fear anybody. So I think Hearts' bubble burst after the Hibs game, believe it or not. And I think it has burst now. And I think we predicted this for quite some time, that once it was burst, they would fall away. And you have to bear in mind that when they play their next game, that's against Falkirk. Falkirk beat them in the cup recently. And again, in fairness to John McGinn, Falkirk aren't afraid of anybody. And I could see Falkirk going to Tynecastle and getting a result there, whether that be a draw or a win. I could see them giving them a serious game because they don't fear anybody. They're a decent side. They're very deserving of the position they're in, and they could possibly be in the top six after the split with the way they're playing. And they have something to aim for too, and I'm sure John McGinn will want to prove that they're here to stay and get them into the top six after the split so that they can play out in the top six. But I think Derek McInnes has reached his last ceiling now. That's as far as it goes for him, and they will fall away now after this, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them dropping points against Falkirk. That's my belief.
Do you guys see the record piece today on the post-split fixtures? The greeting has already started. The wailing is already underway. It was a cry the blues for Ibrox and Tynecastle, because Celtic right now on paper had the easier running, because we, of course, will play both of them at Celtic Park. But because we haven't got the requisite number of home matches in the first stages of the season, we're entitled to one other home game. And they'll be in the high possibility as it'll be against a team we've already played. Played twice at home. So the scenario that they were painting in the record has been somehow unacceptable. This morning was that we would get Motherwell home rather than have to go there again. The flip side being that the Ibrox club has played too many home games and it's now facing three away from home after the split. And they're worried about the prospect that they could get Motherwell away, even though they've already been there twice. So the wailing's already started. Apparently, it's an unwritten rule. It's an unwritten rule. So it's liable for being challenged or whatever the inference they were trying to make was. But the crying and the bitching and the wailing has already started that it will give Celtic an unfair advantage.
Nobody's talking about the really tough phase we're going through at the moment.
I thought it was hilarious. I've written about it for the Mora.
James, that scenario wouldn't happen. If Celtic get three home, Celtic will get almost certainly get three home games against a team, and that team, the Ibrox mob, they won't have to play them away for a third time. Falkirk are the team that are most likely to be knocked out because there's no the fixtures are based on how things finished the previous season. So Falkirk are the real upstarts. Motherwell are as well to an extent, but Falkirk are the team that really screwed things up. So it'll be Falkirk that are put out most. And Falkirk might end up with 17 home matches and 19 away. But the scenario that the record are painting, like many other things in that ailing publication, not really factual, lads.
No, of course it's not. But this is the beginning. But this is the beginning of the big campaign to make sure they get as easier a set of fixtures as possible. I mean, the fact is that they're calling it an unwritten rule. It's not really an unwritten rule at all. We've had to endure this several times in the past few years. And the way it stands right now, we will get three home games and they will get three away games. And I think Hearts are facing three away games as well. And oh my God, oh, the unfair advantage of Celtic getting to play three times at home if they're already having played two of these teams at home already twice. It's pathetic. But this is the start of it. We're going to have to listen to a lot of this in the next few weeks, because anybody can work this out just by looking at the fixture list. I wrote about it last week, talking about how the advantage sort of falls on us because Hearts have got to go to Tynecastle, they've got to go to Easter Road and Celtic Park. The Ibrox clubs have got to go to both Tynecastle and Celtic Park, and we've got the two of them at home. So there was a lot of wailing going on, and it's just the beginning. I think wailing is the order of the day for this title race as we get closer to the end. Any advantage that Celtic are seen to have been given, even if we're entitled to it, is just going to drive people nuts. So we've got a big game coming up on Thursday. Who can be arsed?
No.
How about you, Eric?
I can't say that I'm not arsed. it is Stuttgart after all. You know, it's a decent Bundesliga side coming. I'm sure Martin O'Neill and his players certainly aren't in that frame of mind. They will want to get a result against Stuttgart. What I would say is that
something that he's not that concerned about.
But he's probably not. You know something, James. If he isn't that concerned about it, it's probably an advantage. You know, because if he sends his players into it with the mentality, look, guys, do the best you can, but I'm not overly pushed about this. Then, the guys won't feel so much under pressure then to deliver a result, and they probably will deliver a result, because of that. So, I don't know. It's in different circumstances, it would be a big game. You know, we would be expecting, to do well out of it. For Martin, it has to be damage limitation in terms of the lineup that we put out. Do we put out Rio Hatate? Because Rio Hatate is going to do nothing in that game. His body language is just so not with it at the moment. With the injury to Engels now, how do you set up your midfield? You don't have Oxlade-Chamberlain because he wasn't signed in time. So do you go with Bernardo?
There's no played now.
That's what I was just going to say. Do you go with Bernardo, McGregor possibly, and Negrin, maybe. Negrin has been getting a starting berth regularly in the midfield. So, and he's a bit of an enigma, to be honest. Everybody was commenting about that yesterday on the group or on the Reed Celtic Facebook, saying that, this guy, he's neither here nor there, but then he just gets a goal. Do you know who he's like? Do you know who he reminds me of to a small degree? Obviously, he doesn't score goals as spectacular as he used to, but Matt Letizia. Matt Letizia used to just do nothing in games whatsoever, and then he just pop up and score these amazing goals out of nowhere. And Negrin seems to be the same. He's now, 16, 17 goals this season? And again, yesterday, let's be honest about it, he didn't contribute massively in the game yesterday, but there he was in the right place at the right time for the equaliser. So, one of the commentators is saying there that we should use Sorachi definitely. He can play a part on Thursday night. I don't know. It's very hard to call what kind of a setup Martin's going to go with in that game. But I do believe that if he's going to put them out or send them out without major pressure to win it, that we could probably get a result. And wouldn't it be nice if we won the game 2-0 and gave ourselves a shot when we went out there? We've surprised, other than the Micheland result under Martin, we've surprised everybody in the Europa League. We've got results against some big teams in the Europa League where nobody kind of gave us a snowball's chance in hell. I'll put it this way to you. If we had been continuing under Brendan Rodgers in the Europa League, I wouldn't have seen us qualifying because the interest just didn't seem to be there. Who would you? I'll pass over to Joe because I'm not sure, but who would you be calling as your starting 11 for that game, Joe?
It's a mystery. Touched on it earlier with the midfield. I suggested I read somewhere else somebody saying Sarachi looks like someone that could maybe play in midfield. Bernardo is miles out of the picture, and McCown's been on the bench and not used in the last two matches.
What do you think about Bernardo? What's going on there? Just not consistent enough. I'm really surprised actually at Bernardo's near total absence in big games this season.
It's this strange phenomenon. They don't get matches, then they come in after four games out in the cold. They're not up to speed. They're taking off after an hour, and whatever manager, whether it was Rodgers or Martin O'Neill, first or second time around, saying, I'm not trying him again. So it's a bit of a vicious cycle, that one. So it'd be amazing. I mean, Bernardo got put up for the media before the Braga match, and that was just looked at, oh, well, he's Portuguese, he must know about them. And then he started the game. Not to have been on the bench. I think before the Braga game, he'd been on the bench and maybe minutes here and there, and he was in the starting team. But basically, it was been McGregor and Engels, and then it varied between Hatate and Nygren. Nygren's getting the starts now. But Bernardo seems miles out of it. But again, if you have to get in from Stuttgart, you've got to be at full pelt for 90 minutes. And full pelt at 90 minutes is going to take a lot out of McGregor and Nygren. And then we're looking for them to do a turn on Sunday against Hibs, because apart from the Ox, there's no one else really to come in. And the central defence, Trusty looks as if he might have been overplayed. We only have two central defenders. Martin O'Neill, like others, is very reluctant to play Dane Murray. And Ben Arthur, what was the point? He was on the bench for a recent match, never played. He wasn't on the bench yesterday. O'Neill preferred to have Dane Murray there. Again, you're thinking maybe put Kieran Tierney into the central defence. But again, that's another left-sided player. And it's not particularly fair on Trusty. He had a bad game yesterday. His judgment was gone. It looks as if his confidence was gone. But when you're left-sided and you're playing constantly on the right side of a two-man central defence, it's difficult. And another issue, he hasn't been mentioned tonight in the podcast, Kasper Schmeichel.
Jesus, yeah.
Game by game. You've got to be really confident and have a reliable goalkeeper. And what he was doing at that second goal, I don't know. O'Neill slightly let the cat out of the bag for the Dundee game when he said that he was getting treatment. He made some reference to the shoulder, and Celtic Sport has been whispering about Schmeichel and his shoulder for almost a year now, since he got that injury in the match against Portugal. He's not been the same guy. And again, like Bernardo, Sinisalo, if he comes in for one game a month, he's not going to be completely on it. But with the games coming up, it would be a massive ask, a massive decision. But I'm old enough to remember Alec Ferguson dropping Jim Leighton, who was his blue-eyed boy for the 1990 FA Cup final.
I remember it too.
Selby or somebody came in from absolutely nowhere. It's not the same situation with Sinisalo. He's played against Dundee, he's played against Auchinleck. Different scenario, but I think most Celtic supporters would be more comfortable if Sinisalo came in, played against Stuttgart, played against Hibs, with an eye to, as I say, Ibrox twice and Pittodrie are really big games, and I don't think there's much confidence that Kasper Schmeichel is Kasper Schmeichel of last season.
That very subject. What are we doing with Sinisalo? What are we doing with this guy? I mean, is he... Are we grooming this guy to be number one, or is he just going to basically be the backup forever? Is that what we signed him for?
No, we're kidding ourselves on. There should have been a plan. The only guy that's been a real plan in place was Alistair Johnson. Johnson came in and overlapped, shadowed by Juranovic for about a month, then he took over. But Sinisalo should have had more games. If Schmeichel was outstanding, as he was last season up to about March, then no excuses. Sinisalo, sorry, mate, this guy is in fantastic form. Schmeichel isn't in fantastic form. he shouldn't be in the team. But it's similar. Dane Murray started last season. They get 20 games off on the Queen Park. He brought him back. He barely played. His career's going backwards. If he gets thrown in, he looks very rough. He should have been out on loan at Motherwell. He's been out somewhere getting games. And it's just the squad management is pretty woeful. So we've just got to hope for Martin O'Neill keeping things going. But on the Europa League front, last season's squad would have been fantastic in Europa League. This season's squad is miles short. So hopefully two decent performances against Stuttgart, an unfortunate exit, and then it's concentrate on matches. So it'd be nice to beat Stuttgart, but the reward for beating Stuttgart is a place in the last 16. The reward for that is a place in the last 8. And we know we don't have the squad for the next couple of weeks, never mind the next couple of months. So a gallant exit from Europe, no tears shed, and fingers crossed that the games at Ibrox, League and Scottish Cup, are far more important than the Stuttgart ties.
Les Seeley was the keeper you were thinking of, Joe.
I wasn't far away, thanks. No. Selby came into my mind. Seeley, not Selby.
And he was actually there till the mid-90s nearly with them as a backup.
Right, so last subject, and we'll keep it as brief as possible since we're well over the hour again, as always happens when I'm in the chair. Stuttgart result, then weekend result. What do we think, Eric?
Well, I called it earlier on. I say the pressure's off for the Stuttgart game, so we're going to win that 2-0. And I've been doing this for quite some time now, and I'm going to do it again because I think if I keep doing it, it'll eventually happen. We need a statement win. So I reckon we're going to beat 3-4-0. Okay? Because that statement win is long overdue.
What about you, Joe?
I'll give you a pair of 2-1s. 2-1 to Stuttgart. At best, we might get a 1 each. And then, Eric, good luck waiting for this statement win. I hope you're not putting too much money on it at the bookies, because it could... We get a statement win in Martin O'Neill's first game back. We beat Dundee United 4-0. But since then, there's not been many there's been different statements. It's not been the statement you've been hoping for. So, Hibs on Sunday will be pretty grim and tight. And we've just got to hope that we... nudge out in front. It'd be nice of the game to be ahead after 90 minutes, but it wouldn't be the greatest shock in the world if it was 93, 94, 95. Hopefully not, but I'll take any sort of victory over Hibs. You can dream on for your statement, man. I'll just take a 3 points, whatever it takes.
Well, we'll catch up on that next Monday, Joe. We'll see who was right.
I suspect you guys are right about that. Joe, I'm with you on the Stuttgart game. I actually think we'll get a draw. And it doesn't really leave Martin with a lot of difficult decisions to make. Go to Germany, because although we'll technically still be in the tie, I think most people will realise we could draw at Celtic Park, that we're not going to go over there and beat them in Germany. So I think that would take a lot of pressure off Martin in terms of the choices he's going to make. The statement win, mate, would have been very nice at the weekend. I thought that we were going to get the statement win yesterday and had 1.5 first half goals and a Benjamin Nigrin goal. I took the money anyway, of course I did, but I didn't expect to be fucking 2-0 down at halftime and needn't make the comeback of the season in the second half. Do you know what? We are due it. See, the way we played in the second half yesterday, if we start games like that rather than finish them like that, we will do somebody. I just don't
know. I think if the Ox is starting, James, we'll definitely overrun Hibs in the first half if the Ox is on.
I think it's not outside the realms of possibility. But like Joe, I will take the shittiest, narrowest 1-0 victory with the ball deflecting off the referee and into the net in the last minute. I'll take it happily.
Marcello Cerracci to score another screamer outside the box.
Anyway, guys, thank you for joining us tonight, all of you, and for hanging out with us for this length of time. Listening as well, ramble on. Do you know what? I actually didn't think there was as much negativity tonight as there usually is.
You have to be positive after what happened yesterday.
This evening for a change. But yeah, it was a pleasure as always to be in the chair, and thankfully I won't have to be in the chair for the next couple of weeks, because I think the next couple of weeks are going to be very, very, very stressful and very, very, very interesting. Anybody want to add a final thought? Joe?
No, just do all your usual things. Thumbs up, come back, put a comment on. We're along nicely with subscriptions and views, so you can keep that up. A few pests in the comments. We've had no references recently to financial sustainability nonsense, but we'll wait for that. So, no, all three of us have got websites. We've got content on there every day. Very cynical, very independent. If that's your cup of tea, come and have a look. If you're on my site, these other two guys are pretty decent. I'm sure they'd say the same. So you'll get independent content on each of these three sites and three miserable buggers every Monday.
And with okay. that, I think we can sign off, unless Eric's got something he wants to add.
No, I'll see you miserable buggers next week and I'll have my statement win. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.